Welcome to Awakening Plus. It's September 23rd, 2021, and this is our very first Ask Me Anything call. And tonight you can ask me anything. So there's no need to set a sacred container or call directions. We're just chatting tonight. So we do have several questions that have been emailed, and we will get to those for sure. But I want to give first priority to those who are actually showing up live. So if anyone has a question for me, again, the preference is that the question relate to the themes of Awakening Plus, you know, awakening, healing, service to the great awakening, that kind of thing. So the only caveat I'll make is if I feel like a question is just directly too much about that one person and the answer would not really help others that much, then I may defer that question. So that's the only caveat I bring into the mix here. So anyone can unmute. So if you're here and you have a question, then lay it on me. Carmen, hi.
Hi. So I'm not sure if this is appropriate or not, but you can
tell me. So hang on, Carmen. I'm not hearing you. Let me check my audio. Okay, I need to make a shift here. Just give me just a moment. My computer's been weird with the, So speak now, please, and see if I can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me?
No.
No?
Weird. Mm-hmm. Okay, give me a moment. See if I can figure out what's going on here. All right, one moment. Maybe that's the problem. Okay, so speak again, Carmen, please.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Wow, still nothing. Okay, I'm going to pause the recording.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're good now. Whatever I did just fixed it. It was a mystery. It's done. And Mercury retrograde is still a few days away. So thanks for your patience, everybody. So Carmen, what's your question?
So yes, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but you'll tell me. So I was curious to know your background about how you decided to become a shaman. Mm-hmm. And my second question related to that was Jesus a shaman?
Okay. Well, let me answer the second question first. I think Jesus was a shaman, and I've seen many others with the same opinion. Anyone who goes around and raises people from the dead and heals people, that's pretty darn shamanic, all right? So yes, in my opinion, that counts for, in my opinion, he was one of the most amazing shamans ever. Of course, he was not just a shaman, but he definitely had the shamanic juju. As far as how I got to be a shaman, this reminds me too much of my favorite Leo joke. It's like, oh, I've talked enough about myself. Why don't you talk about me for a while? But I'll try not to go on too long. It was totally unintended. When I, in about 2000, I think it was 2008, I got introduced to plant spirit work, which I'd never even heard of until that point, and started working with San Pedro cactus and then into ayahuasca ceremonies. And pretty quickly, I began wondering, wow, wouldn't it be cool to do this? I mean, I'm receiving such amazing healing and awakening from this. I'd love to help others too. And I had the ego desire to be a shaman for a while, and kind of played with that for a couple of years, 3 years. And then I was in a dieta in Peru with the shaman I was working with, and he knew I had this idea, and he saw me hobnobbing with other people at the dieta where I didn't realize it, but you're supposed to be just off on your own, not talking to anybody. I hadn't got the memo. And he said, man, you can't even stay on your own. You think you'll be a shaman? Good grief. Just forget about being a shaman, work on your own healing. And I said, you're right. And I took him to heart and I gave up any idea of being a shaman at that point. And then a few months later in another ayahuasca ceremony, the medicine called me to be a shaman. And that is a very different thing than having the ego desire. So my path was having the ego desire first, releasing it truly, and then being called back. And then I spent years, you know, drinking ayahuasca, doing ceremonial work, actually doing several years of apprenticeship before I felt comfortable putting that label on myself. So I was called to it after releasing the ego desire, and then took years of ceremonial work to get to where I could effectively hold space for other folks like I do here in Awakening Plus. Is that helpful, Lance?
Was all of that in Peru?
No. Most of it was not. Most of the ceremonies were here local.
Oh, okay.
Even though ayahuasca is technically illegal just about everywhere, there's a lot of ceremonies and it all goes kind of under the radar. So I did most of my ceremonies here in the Asheville, North Carolina area.
Uh-huh. Well,
you'd be amazed how many ayahuasca shamans pass through town. It's amazing.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thanks for your questions, Carmen.
Sure.
Okay. Who else has a question? Actually, let's play ping pong. So we'll do one live question and then we'll do a question from the list. So hang on a second. There we go. Okay. So this is from Jeannie. She says, when making plans for spiritual growth or healing issues, I used to have a list, or I would work on everything that just showed up ad hoc. Now I'm going more toward just do work on the one thing. Working on that one thing may unloose a lot of other healing on other topics. What is your current method? I do some of both. For example, if I'm obviously being triggered by something, then I will definitely do work on that particular thing using one of my shadow work modalities, whether that's a healing invocation or internal family systems therapy or doing some breath work. However, when I go into an ayahuasca ceremony, what I've learned over doing lots of these is that the medicine knows better than I do what healing I need. So in context where I'm surrendering to a more powerful consciousness like ayahuasca, I just say, hey, mama, you know what I need. Lay it on me. And often don't even make a particular request. Now, I'm not saying I never do. But even if I do, as often as not, the request will not be honored. She says, I got more important things to do for you. We're going to do this instead. She may not say that literally, but that's the effect of what happens. So it depends on context. If something's up in my face and I'm being triggered by something, or I'm clearly having an affliction of some kind, then I'll definitely get to work on that specifically. If I'm in a plant spirit ceremony, I'll just relax and let the medicine bring me what I need. So that's Jeannie's question. I hope that was helpful. Let's see. I don't see Jeannie in the list, so hopefully that was an adequate answer for her. So back to our live folks. Does anyone on the live call have a question? Dale, hi.
Hi. So building off what you were just saying about the spiritual growth is I spent many, many years trying and being very focused. And what's come to me recently is when I was trying, it was because I was trying to fix something, which meant that the underlying message was I wasn't good enough and I had to get better and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So not when I'm triggered. I do exactly the same as you. If something's triggering me, I look at what is it, own it, let it go. But in the more general direction of, and especially in terms of embodied awakening, I guess what I'm asking is it better to be led by spirit and the universe? Or if not, if you're focused, how do you come to it from a place that isn't like I'm trying to fix something, that old Capricorn part of me?
It depends on your level of consciousness. Different levels require different approaches. And by the way, I don't think there's anything wrong with needing to fix something if it needs fixing. And I have plenty of Capricorn myself, so I'm big on fixing things too sometimes. So let me try to take it level by level. If you're at a fundamental human level, like most people with not much divine consciousness, then you don't have much choice but to focus in on what needs fixing and fix it, because there's not really, you're
not even
aware.
I've been on this path for over 30 years, so.
Right. Okay. And I'm getting to your level pretty quick. I just wanted to start at the basis.
Sorry.
Okay. Because I'm answering for other people too. Okay. So then you may gain some spiritual awareness, and then you're aware, wow, I've got this help from the divine, and you may have some experience, wow, this higher part of me knows what I need better than I do. And at that point, there might be a mixture where, like I was describing a moment ago, I might I might do specific work on specific things from ego, and I might relax and let spirit lead me in other cases. The extreme arc of that motion would be where you are in such a deep perpetual state of awakening, and there is such a full merging of ego and spirit that free will has basically disappeared, and there is no sense of a human separate from your divinity, in which case there's really no point in calling anything forward from the ego level, because at that point everything is just showing up. Someone I think who is deeply awakened enough is in such a deep flow that the universe simply sends down everything they need without the human having to kind of initiate things, that magical flow state. And in my own experience, I've moved more toward that. I'm in by no means fully in that state I just described, but it's gotten a little more toward that, where more and more synchronicity is operating more easily and more things are flowing in without me having to work so hard for them. So my answer is it depends on level. If you are already where the river's flowing everything to you without effort, then you don't need to lift much of a finger. But it could be that you're partially there. Some things are flowing in nicely and without having to put effort forward. Other times you may say, you know, a lot is coming, but there's this one thing I want over here and it ain't coming on its own. So I guess I better, you know, fire up my law of attraction and work for it and call it in. And there's all sorts of shades of gray between just the effort I must do everything on my own versus the I need to lift not a finger because everything's coming to me. Is that a helpful answer, Dale?
Yes. So it depends.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not in the just fully embodied. And then if I may ask just one more added to this is, So I work in the real world. I work in, I'm not sure it's the real world. I work in the unreal world in corporate America. So there's this balance between operating in that environment and which is so ego driven.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal is to, just because everybody else is ego driven, is not to show up ego driven myself.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes it more difficult, that flow state that you're talking about, where you're awakened all the time. I struggle with how you can achieve that if you are operating in an environment that is not like-minded. Does that make sense?
It does. And I invite you to view that as part of your spiritual practice. Say, okay, I'm going into this environment where it seems like most or everyone else is not awakened, and all in many corporate environments is also a service to self. Let's just get what we can for ourselves. There's not much concern for the other a lot of times. So it's a very, not the kind of environment you would hope for as an awakened being. But in that case, you say, okay, I'm choosing to be in this corporate environment, and I would extend the same idea, and I'm in this challenging relationship or whatever, something's going on and it's a lower vibration experience and I'm trying to be higher. Now the challenge is, can I hold my consciousness even in this lower vibration field? And you are being of service to everyone and everything in that field if you're able to come in and hold divine beingness even in the midst of everyone else doing things that don't seem very high vibration. And one method of doing that might be just to start your day with the embodied awakening invocation. And then if you are at work and you find, oh, there's mental chatter and there's challenging emotions from what's happening, just keep refreshing the awakening, keep refreshing your awareness of self, you know, divine self, as best you can. And of course you'll stumble and fall all over the place, but I think the more you practice it, the better you'll get. So I would not say I must now give up my divine consciousness to be in this environment. I would say I will do what I can to hold my consciousness in even the lowest vibration environment that I enter. Does that make any sense?
Thank you. That's very, very helpful.
Yeah. And then you become sort of a light bringer. You're the one shining the light, and there's no telling how much good you'll do just radiating your divinity just by being awake. And even if no one seems to be getting it, you have no idea what seeds you're planting. And it could be years later that someone finally gets it, and it was because you were shining your divinities in an office 10 years ago. You know, you just don't know.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Great question. All right, let's take one from the list now. This question is, you often mention the teachings of Adyashanti in your talks, and I was wondering which of his books you recommended and or found the most insightful. So for those who don't know, Adyashanti, Adyashanti, is an awakened teacher. He's a non-dual teacher. He was a hardcore Zen guy for 18 years and then awakened and then left Zen behind because, as they say, once you've crossed the river, you don't need the raft. And he's written a number of wonderful books. My favorite is called The End of Your World. And it is specifically a book on how to function once you've had a lasting spiritual awakening. And it's really good advice from someone who's been there. And this guy not only has ripened his own awakening, but he's had a lot of people awaken, you know, in his retreats and stuff, and has guided them. And he's seen where people stumble and the challenges they have when they're awake and then trying to function here in, not unlike our last question, you know, how do I function in this, you know, difficult world as an awakened being? So The End of Your World is fantastic. I really love the advice in there. Okay, so that's that question. Who's next on the live call?
All right, I'll jump in.
Okay. Hey, Risa.
When we do the, how do you frame the idea of the new Earth? I've heard some people say that there's a new guardian of Earth, that the Earth is changing frequency, mm-hmm. and I've just heard it framed in different ways. I just wondered what your favorite way of thinking about it is.
Okay. Right now, I'm working with one of two scenarios, and I'm not sure which is true. One scenario is a pretty widespread idea that, you know, Earth as we know it now, at this level of being, is turning into a paradise. And therefore, all this turmoil we're going through is to weed out the darkness, have it come up, be dealt with, and then Earth can be more of a paradise as more and more conscious people are here. And even if it takes just the old guard dying out and all the new conscious people becoming the majority eventually over, you know, many decades, it could be that, you know, this 3D Earth itself will rise to more of an Aquarian vibration as expressed in like the Age of Aquarius idea. And I would love it if that happened. There's another body of teaching that gives a different approach, and that's the Law of One. And what I'm about to say is one of the most controversial things in that channeling, which is that our function for being here on Earth in human bodies is not to perfect Earth, but our job as a human is to come and make a choice between service to self and service to other. And the turmoil on Earth is by design. And according to this teaching, the Earth is now at the end of a 75,000 year cycle. And ideally, all the humans would now be graduating from human into the next level, which is fourth density. Earth is third, next would be fourth. And Ra says the word density instead of dimension. Ra is a being from a few billion years ahead of us who apparently is being channeled and giving its wisdom back before it moves on into unity. So anyhow, we've got this choice, and those who choose the path of service to other, which is the majority, have to be at least 51%, you know, focused on others, just a tiny bit more selfless than selfish. And if they truly establish that vibration, then when they die, they will not have to reincarnate, and they're on to fourth density. Those who graduate on the other extreme, service to self, have to be so selfish and so ruthless that they basically close their hearts down completely. And if they become Klingon enough, so to speak, then they can graduate and move on to their different path. And this is like the split point. Are you going to choose service to other or service to self? By that idea, then the Earth will not become a paradise. It's a deliberately difficult staging ground because in a prior, now this gets pretty weird, in a prior universe, when Earth was truly a paradise, more like Garden of Eden vibe, I mean, not totally that way, but in the sense of no conflict, really high vibration, really wonderful time, the Earthlings on that universe who actually knew about the other dimensions, they didn't have a veil like we did, still stayed on Earth. They said, this is so great. I love it so much, or I don't even want to move on. And that kind of, you know, slowed the natural cycle of evolution, and spirit said, well, that's not working so well. We made Earth too nice. So we better tweak it up next time. So next time, the one we're in now, we'll put some service to self beings in there, and they will try to take advantage of the service to other beings. And thus the service to other beings, the light beings, will, you know, oh, I'm being, you know, challenged here. I've got a wound. I've got a trauma. I've got development I need to do. And thus I view the dark side beings as initiators. They may not know they're doing this, and they may have no intention of helping us out at all. They may just be on their own self-service path, but they will try to take advantage of us, and therefore we get to see where we're still wounded or where we still need to grow. And then once we make the healing or move to the level of consciousness where that being can't mess with us, we've gone to the next level, and that dark initiator has served their function. They don't mess with us anymore. Then we may plateau for a bit, and here comes our next initiator, and on and on and on. So that makes some sense to me. By that reckoning, Earth is not designed ever to be harmonious, but we're designed to get why we came here, which was just to polarize service to self or service to other. Once we've done our polarization, we move on. We don't have to reincarnate here. And then the next batch of humans will eventually come through. So I don't know which is true. I can see an argument for both sides. Part of me says I would just love it if this Earth right here, right now, became this lovely paradise and we all treated each other beautifully. If the law of one idea is correct, then that would defeat the purpose of being here. So I'm not sure which. The way I look at it, I'm going to behave the same either way, because whichever outcome there is, if we all do what we can to awaken, I'm assuming that everyone here is on service to other paths. So I'll speak from that perspective. I honor that others choose the different path, but you know, we're service to other folks here. So whether Earth itself can be paradise or whether we just need to become conscious enough to move along, you know, it's the same strategy. We're going to do the same service to other, the same awakening, the same healing, whichever outcome it is, we behave the same regardless, in my opinion. So it doesn't really matter which of those stories is true. You know, the teaching I do and the work we can all do is the same and will lead to a wonderful outcome either way. So maybe a wordier answer than you were expecting. So you're still muted.
So when you visualize the frequency of the Earth increasing, do you have a picture of it in your mind, what it looks like, what it feels like,
Well, what I would visualize is what Ra describes as fourth density Earth. And that's a pretty cool vision. As I recall it from, I spent years studying this material. It's pretty amazing. So Ra describes, it's like Earth. Think of our Earth in seven densities. Okay. And as third people, we can see second and first. First density is just, you know, the elements, fire, earth, air, water. Second density is animals and plants. Third density is us and everything below us. But we can't see beyond third, because there's a veil deliberately placed. Now, once we get past, we're into fourth density, we still have bodies, but they are more etheric bodies. You could call them physical, but they're more luminous. Okay. Furthermore, we have dual consciousness. We have individual awareness like humans do now. We simultaneously are ourselves in the planetary brain. And each of us is simultaneously participating in the entire consciousness of plant, like we were conscious as Gaia. Okay. Furthermore, once fourth density gets up and rolling, we're completely transparent. There's no such thing as a private thought or a private emotion. Anything we're feeling or thinking is visible to everyone around us. Okay, so full telepathic, you know, openness. And since the fourth density is about learning unconditional love, that is the reason we do fourth density, it's like the idea is you can perceive everything going on in everyone else. And instead of judging it, you have compassion and acceptance and, you know, how can I help you kind of vibe. So it's a very different kind of thing where in this reality we're in now, if we were that transparent, people would try to take advantage of it and would try to hurt us in many cases. And fourth density, that is, you will just receive unconditional love, compassion, and support when your wounds or weaknesses or whatever are seen. So that's the vision of fourth density that Ra shows. And what I'm excited about is, you know, in our Awakening Plus calls, we do stuff kind of like that. I'm in no way saying that what we do in some of our calls is full on fourth density, but there's a lot of mixture where I think many people, including myself, were working third and fourth density at the same time. We're sort of straddling worlds. And thus enough of us who are holding enough of the fourth density conference of consciousness, forgive me, can therefore do an event where we are meditating together and we all blend together into a single field of energy. Or we blend with the earth that we're blessing or something like that. So it's very common on Awakening Plus calls for us to have these fields of merged consciousness and, you know, no individuality at all, just part of a field, things like that. So, you know, that's what's happening in our calls. We're getting sort of a taste of fourth density. But I have no way to know what full on fourth density feels like because I haven't just been fourth density. Based on what I've read in the Law of One, it feels like we're kind of bringing in tastes of it, if it will. But my speculation is that the full on experience would be way more cool than anything we can do while we're still in human bodies.
So do you think that the plethora of confessionals and memoirs and blogs and sometimes what seems like oversharing may be an indication of the desire to head in that direction?
I think it depends on what's being overshared. I just got an insight. In the sense that people are being more transparent, more open. I think I get your drift now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people are being more open, more authentic, more real. In a sense, that's a step toward fourth density. I'm not hiding my stuff anymore. I'm being really open and clear about both my triumphs and my challenges. And I think, yes, that does feel like steps toward fourth density. Thank you. That's a good insight. Any other questions? I'll follow up on that. Okay, great. Great question. Okay, so let's go back to the archive once more of the incoming questions. Brandy writes, I would love to hear you speak about dreams, shamanic dreams, walking between the worlds, energy and dream work, etc. Some dreams feel more real than others. I've always found dreams interesting. Sometimes dreams feel like premonitions. Sometimes I visit loved ones who have passed. Sometimes I know it's just a dream based on something I saw in a TV show or movie or read in a magazine. Anyway, I would love to just hear your thoughts and experience regarding dreams. I'll start with just dreams. Like when you're asleep. I sometimes have them, but I rarely remember them. So maybe it's because Neptune is buried at the bottom of my chart and Neptune rules dreams. I don't have a lot of conscious access to them. I can go weeks without remembering a dream. However, dreams can sometimes bring important messages, and often people receive divine information in dreams. And some people do get premonitions in dreams. They'll dream something and then it will happen. So that I believe that does happen, and I believe that's one way that spirit speaks to people. Let me see what else. So in terms of a shamanic dream, walking between the worlds, that could only loosely be called a dream because I believe the other dimensions we go to, like in journeys, are very real places. They're just as real as 3D is real here. Every dimension has its own full reality in its own right. So they may seem like a dream state compared to us if we haven't awoken enough to realize their reality. I imagine that a being in the shamanic lower world experiencing human 3D would feel like that was a dream to them. I don't know. So I hope that addresses the shamanic dream part of that. I'm just seeing what else. Yeah, and sometimes dreams are just rehash of events. I think I've read a fair amount on sleep and dreaming, and some of the dream work is just rehashing of events, kind of the brain processing through stuff and deciding what it's going to keep and what it's going to hold on to. Trying to think. I don't know what else I could really share about dreams. So I hope that was an adequate answer. Iris says, do you want to follow up with dream work? If you have a follow-up question on that, feel free to ask it, Risa.
I was just thinking about sometimes how people actually seem to do a lot of work, labor of various spiritual sorts in their dreams.
Mm-hmm. That is true for some people. So I can only offer my perspective as a person who hardly ever remembers a dream. So any dream work I'm doing is not remembered by my personality. Although I remember the first guru, actually the only guru I followed way back in Oklahoma when I was much younger, said that he never actually lost consciousness. He said his body would go to sleep, but his consciousness would remain awake and would work in other levels. So apparently he was dream working every day, or rather every night. So some people can do that, but again, that's not a talent of mine, so I can't really speak to it in any depth. Is that a sufficient answer, Risa?
Oh, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'd love another live question. Who's got one?
Hello?
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, I'm not exactly sure how to ask this and how you will answer it. So
okay.
The gist of the question is, okay, so for instance, when a person goes from working, say, in corporate America, then doing their own business and becoming a healer, going down that path.
Mm-hmm.
They start down this path, and then people say, well, you're so good at doing that. And then that person goes into that healing touch or that healing intuitive readings. Or anyway, sometimes the healing field, like, gets chosen for them because people say, oh, you're good at that. Oh, you should do that, you know. And that it just kind of unfolds, right? Okay,
uh-huh.
So then at some point, like in my life, and I've seen in other people's lives, they say, okay, I've been doing all 5 or 6 of these things. Now I only want to do 2 of these things. And the question comes in, like, controlling what we're doing in service or allowing, like, spirit to use us? I mean, I don't know how to say that. You know what I'm saying?
I think I get the gist of your question.
Okay.
So, in fact, you're describing my journey in a large degree. Because I was in the corporate world until age 41. And then I moved from Oklahoma to Asheville, North Carolina, ostensibly to be a singer-songwriter. That's what I thought I was going to do. That didn't make me any money. So I then went from astrology, and then healing got incorporated and has been a part of what I do ever since. So what I would suggest to anyone who's facing that kind of decision where they're wondering, what should I do for my vocation? I would really listen to their own passion and their own enthusiasm, especially if they're doing it not for the money, but because this is my sole purpose. That's why I left an $80,000 a year corporate job in Oklahoma with company car and benefits and chose to be a singer-songwriter at the age of 41, where I knew the income potential was not nearly as much, but I just knew I had to do it. It was like, this is what I'm here to do. And when you get into a soul-driven thing like that, then the money becomes less important than following your passion. So I would ask a person like that, not what do other people think I should do, but what do I feel passionate about doing from within myself? And what I have experienced definitely in my life, and I've worked with like 10,000 clients now in my private practice, and what I see the most successful people doing is they're the ones who have followed their passion, you know, without compromise, and they're doing what they love to do, and they make a living at it at least, and often they prosper. So there's a book title that kind of summarizes it: do what you love, the money will follow. And it's not true every single time, but I find those who really persevere and do what it takes to succeed in whatever field they're doing can you know, thrive or at least survive doing what they're passionate about. And I still haven't got to where I'm making $80,000 a year yet, net, like I was with this other job. But I'm so much happier. Oh, my God. Way, way happier. So bottom line, consider perhaps what other people say you should do, but do what you really feel passionate about. I'll add one more layer to my answer. There's a guy named Gay Hendricks who talks about the four zones. And it's good to consider in choosing a career which zone it's putting you in. So here in brief is the four zones. First is the zone of incompetence. You can do it in the first place, so you should definitely delegate it to someone else if it has to be done. That one's easy. Then zone of competence. Sure, I can sweep a floor or wash a dish, but is that really the best use of my time? Most times, maybe not. So that those competence activities should be delegated. The next one gets a little trickier, zone of excellence. And this gets into the example you were giving, Joanne. People say, I'm really good at this, and I am really good at this. And I could even make a great living at it, but I'm not passionate about it. And other people can do it pretty well too. So this theory says even zone of excellence activities should be delegated out to other people. The thing you should try to maximize is zone of genius. Zone of genius activities is where you're really uniquely good at this thing, or could be uniquely good. You're really passionate about it. And this is stuff that only you can do. You've got such a unique talent set that you are uniquely qualified to do this work, and few, if any, other people can do it like you can. An example would be, you know, like Elon Musk, who doesn't run his companies. He just gets the brilliant ideas, and then he hires the number two person from each company that's the top of its field and has that person run his company. So zone of genius is where you're doing the thing that not only are you either really good at already, or you know you could be really good, but the passion is there. And once again, we come back to, are you doing what you're passionate about? And especially in this world that shifts so fast, it's okay to shift the particulars of what you're passionate about. You know, like I said, in my own life, I've shifted from a singer-songwriter to astrologer to shamanic healer to awakening activator to life coach to membership, you know, founder. And a lot of them run simultaneously, but I put my energy mostly where my passion is. And if you can find a way to make a living where you're truly passionate about it on an ongoing basis, not to say you never have an off day, but generally speaking, you're excited to get up that day and do that job. And I hope that's a helpful answer. Is that helpful, Joanne?
I have a little bit extra. Okay, so there's a little extra because I have gone with the flow, and I allow people to tell me, oh, you're so good at that, and so you should do that. So I start doing six things. I narrow it down to two. Then I narrow it down to one. Mm-hmm. And then I go, I want to retire, but I'm not ready to retire. And I'm not passionate about what I've been passionate about. Right. I mean, I'm really not there. So I'm in the process of selling my company, and I just feel like just being the light and raising roses. That's what I feel like doing. And I keep hearing, this is what is a little confusing, is you say you can just be the light, raise vibration, want to just raise roses. And then I keep hearing there is something for you that you haven't found yet. You're not doing your full potential. And I keep thinking, well, what is that? Well, what is that? And I'm waiting for that to fall in.
So are you hearing that outside yourself, or is that a voice inside you telling you that?
Inside, I believe. Okay. Yes, inside.
Well, so maybe it's time to clear the decks of that which you're no longer excited about, so that you've got space for the new thing to come in.
Okay, so this is Joanne controlling Joanne going, I want it done already. I'm an Aries. Get it done already. I talked about this like last year, at the end of last year. I was ready to just sell my company and be done. Uh-huh. Finally announced it in June. I made the decision. I'm selling off formulas. I'm selling supplies. I'm selling my stuff. I don't want to do it anymore. I really honestly don't.
Good. Okay.
And I do have sold some, and I'm giving my legacy to other people, whatever, passing it on through my formulas. So here's the thing. So that was June. Now we're in September, and someone said, well, it could take months and years to finish all this off.
Well, just keep after it. It takes as long as it takes.
So then the controlling thing is like, well, if I'm supposed to be doing something really big, mm-hmm. am I supposed to be doing something really big? Wouldn't it just fall in so I could start it over?
Well, you don't get to always control the timing of it. It could be, Joanne, the universe is waiting till you finish the final sale of your company before it drops the new thing in.
see that okay, so dear, that's kind of what I'm, that's my question in my mind. So do I try to hurry up and finish it off? Do I allow it? So you see, with the control and the allowing thing, do I just allow it to just take its time and finish off as it's, you know, selling formulas, selling supplies? I got a lot of stuff to sell.
I don't know. I would say, what are you intuitively called to do in that context? There's no right or wrong answer that I can give you on that.
Yeah, I put it out there. I have put it out there to my list to different people, and people inquire, and I've sold some. And I mean, I could keep doing that and start something on the side. I mean, if I'm being called by the universe to do something like a bigger job, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't
want
to.
Well, I'll give you what's coming to me as advice.
Please.
If this business is something you're no longer passionate about and you're ready to be done with it, I would expedite getting it totally wrapped up and done.
Yeah.
The sooner is better.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the whole allowing and controlling in our lives, how do we find the balance with all of that?
Well, I addressed that earlier on this call.
You know,
if things are not flowing already the way you want them to, and you have a desire other than what's already happening, then you step up and you make it happen.
Yeah, like you said.
We have every right to be a co-creator of this universe.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to all of these things, you know, that we
there are.
That's the many layers, right?
Yeah, and okay. You just work with where you're at.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Joanne. Thanks for your question. All right, so let's go to the we got two more questions that were already sent. Carolyn asks, when you are working with a client, how do you know what needs some healing, and how do you know when that has happened? So I think what she's asking is, I'm with a client. How do I know that a certain thing needs to be worked on? Well, a lot of times they'll tell me. They already know, and therefore I'll put attention where they want the healing to be. Sometimes the thing that needs healing shows up. For example, this very day, earlier, I did a IFS session for a client, and he wanted to work on mixed feelings toward his girlfriend. He says, part of me wants to be with her, part of me sometimes wants to pull back. And I said, well, let's work with those two parts in you. And we went in there and tried to do that, but we got diverted, and we ended up working on his wounding with his dad. And that was the work we needed to do. So in that case, we started to work in one direction, but the real work that needed to happen showed up, and we had to follow the lead according to the IFS protocol. So that's one example that just happens, what was strong in my mind. It's also, over thanks to the plant spirits I work with, I've developed enough empathic sensitivity that when I'm with a client, I can at least to some degree feel in me what's happening in them. It's like my body is an empathic mirror of their experience. Maybe not I'm feeling 100% of what they're feeling, but enough that I can tell what's going on. So I may just feel in my body, oh, that feels weird down there in my kidney, and therefore they've got something going on in the kidney. So my empathic awareness will show me what might need attention, and thus we can direct healing energy there as needed. Or sometimes just the knowing of something will pop in, and I'll just somehow know what needs to happen. But those, what in a healing context, what I know is what's basically given me through empathic sensitivity or divine download, pretty much. And how do I know when the healing has happened? The same way, if I'm tuned into that person's experience and I finally feel the energy clear and open, like this happens all the time in the IFS work I do, for example, I can feel their inner world enough that I can feel the part they're working with. I can feel the self. I can feel when the part's unburdening and lightening up, and can track it by feeling. And thus, I can feel when things are feeling light and clear, then I'll know what's happening. In the same way, how do I lead an Awakening Plus call? You know, when I'm doing a shamanic awakening ceremony like I did last night, how do I know when to stop the healing stuff and move into the let's come into our higher selves? Because the overall field of energy has lifted enough that I can feel the lightness enough that, okay, we're good. Let's move on to the next round. So it's just having developed enough empathic sensitivity. And I'll add, I was just thick as a brick for decades. I was so not empathic at all. Just very little sensitivity. I mean, maybe a tiny smidge on occasion, but it took years and years of ayahuasca and San Pedro and mushroom ceremonies and just these plant spirits just stripping away all these layers of thick, heavy sludge off me, just year after year after year before I finally got sensitive enough to do the kind of shamanic work I do now. So my motto is, if I can do it, anybody can do it. You couldn't have been any more insensitive empathically than I was before I started this whole plant spirit round. So I hope that's a helpful answer for Carolyn. So, and in fact, she's on the call. So I just answered your email question, Carolyn. If you have a follow-up or question about that, feel free to unmute and follow up. If not, I'll assume that that was an adequate answer. I guess it was adequate. Cool. Okay, does anyone have a live question?
I have a very quick question.
Okay.
Dimensions and rays. Like people talk about somebody dies and they're at the sixth ray.
Mm-hmm.
So are they at the sixth dimension also? Do you know the difference between rays and dimensions?
I really don't. I think that gets into like the Alice Bailey work. And I have not studied that really at all. So I just have to plead ignorance on that one. I truly don't understand the correlation between rays and dimensions.
Okay, and so Ra calls dimensions, what did he call Ra?
Well, he uses the word densities. And it's okay. You say he, but it's an it. It's Ra like is a collective of beings at a way high level. Anyhow. So anyhow, yeah. So where most of us would say dimensions, Ra says densities.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you call rays, okay. Because there's so many ways of saying maybe the same thing, but maybe they're not the same then. Okay.
Yeah, and I regret that I just am not qualified to answer your question. I'm sorry.
It's only a question. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, and just as a side note, to make things even more confusing, when Ra talks about greater density, it's talking about going more toward oneness. To Ra, the greatest density of all is just oneness, pure light. And therefore, you know, an earth physical plane for him would be the least dense vibration. So reading Law of One, you have to get used to some unusual ways of thinking and language use. Okay, we have one more question that was sent by email. This one's from JC, not the cat, but the person. Dearest Benjamin, I don't know if this is appropriate for the entire group, but I'm definitely struggling. I entered a relationship this May. It was very dysfunctional, not supportive to me, and I do not want to go back to it. But the grief and anxiety are almost unbearable. I pray every day and I am chanting and trying to be a witness to this, but it is excruciating. It is the black pit of hell. If you could please not use my name, if you answer this tonight, my initials are JC, and that would be fine to use those. Namaste. Okay. So I totally, even as I feel into your question, JC, I can feel some of your pain. And all I know when a person is in such pain is use your shadow work tools. You don't have to have the suffering go on forever. So what I would say is whether you're drawn to one of the tools that we use here in Awakening Plus, whether that's healing invocation or shamanic breath work or internal family systems, the course we have inside the membership, those are all ways you could work with that grief and that anxiety. And I would encourage you, if those tools don't work for you, seek other tools. But you don't just have to sit there in that difficulty. One of my sayings is, if you're going through hell, keep going. So if you're believing you just have to sit with it endlessly and maybe some year it will clear, I know some people who do have that opinion about, you know, grief and just be with it until it leaves, or maybe just a grant that maybe it'll never leave, maybe I'll be grieving the rest of my life. That's a valid viewpoint. It's not a viewpoint that I choose to follow. I believe that no matter how terrible the suffering is, if you begin working yourself consciously, if you start by just using either like embodied awakening invocation to stay as awake as you can. In IFS thinking, they would say it is some of your parts that are suffering. Self is not suffering. Self cannot suffer. Self is always in equanimity. So if you can identify, even if you could just get to the point of just for a start, JC, just say, okay, a part of me feels grief. A part of me feels anxiety. Even just making that statement would be acknowledging there is a part of me that isn't in that state. And then if you can, through any modality or tool in Awakening Plus or elsewhere, just get access to that peaceful part, then from that, you can start working the wounded parts and start healing them. But as long as you're in IFS tech terminology, we would say the state you're describing is where the wounded part has blended with self and covered it over. And self is temporarily asleep in a context like that, where you cannot get out of the grief. It's anxiety. It's pervasive. It's endless. You can't escape from it. So you've got to find some way to get connected with self again. And once you've got that fundamental anchor, so to speak, in the spirit energy, then you can begin much more effectively healing the grief and the anxiety. So I hope that's helpful. And I would sure encourage you to at least try the IFS course in Awakening Plus, or try some of the shamanic awakening calls or some of the shamanic breathwork calls. Those are the heavy duty shadow work modalities in there, and see if they don't help. So I sincerely hope that's a helpful answer, because I would love you to get past all that difficulty, JC. Okay. So any other live questions? Looks like not. Okay, now I've been the Ask Me Anything guy, but if anyone here feels like they have other insights that would be helpful to any of the questions that have been asked, I'd now like to open to anyone else who would like to share their wisdom, anything above and beyond, or even in contradiction to what I've said. So would love to hear any other insights to any of the questions that have been asked that were sticking in your mind. I wish you'd said that. So if anyone wants to do that, then feel free to unmute and share that.
I have a comment. It's me again, Joanne.
Hi, Joanne.
We were talking about moving from the third and being into the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have a mind right now. I read on Facebook. I don't know. Some different people have said we're already in the moving into fifth dimension.
Right.
That's wisdom. And mm-hmm. It's possible, my opinion is, is it possible that there are people in the third, fourth, fifth, various stages, and we're all on Earth playing together at the same time?
Yeah, I believe that is. Yeah, I absolutely think that's true. So
okay.
let me address that.
Okay.
My understanding, again, this is from Law of One, is that Earth is like behind schedule. This was supposed to be the big harvest time when, you know, billions of people were finishing their last human incarnation and moving on to the next level. And so many people are looky dooky, polarizing neither service to self nor service to other, but to gray area middle, that they're going to miss the graduation opportunity. And then they'll have to do another cycle. You know, it won't be on Earth, because apparently third density Earth will kind of close down after this round. But there's, you know, a whole universe full of planets, and they'll be able to start incarnating somewhere else and do their next round somewhere else in an appropriate third density environment. So they'll be able to just run that there. So because we're behind schedule, so to speak, and the harvest, at least at the time the Law of One was channeled 35 years ago, you know, there wasn't enough people on schedule to make a really strong harvest. Lots of beings have come in from other places. Some have come from this universe, from planets that are more evolved than Earth is. Some are coming from higher densities. Like beings are actually volunteering. They've already gone a billion or 2 years ahead, and they're saying, yeah, I'll pop down here from six and I'll have an incarnation on Earth, even knowing doing so risks getting stuck in an Earth cycle and having to work their way back up. So beings are pretty amazing with the risk they'll take to help folks out. I believe there are many beings here from many dimensions, many realities, many planets. And, you know, they've taken on human bodies, but their home isn't here. I've worked with so many hundreds of clients who are what the Law of One would call wanderers, not native to Earth. And if you're a person who's never felt at home on Earth and say, what am I doing in this crazy place? These people treat each other so badly. Oh, my God. Then you might not be Earth native at all. You might have, what I say, volunteered for hazard duty, taken on a body and said, well, I'll be here for a bit. I'll try to help out the harvest. And with any luck, I'll wake up and remember what I am and won't get stuck here. So that's kind of how it plays. So I think the latest channelings from LL Research, that's Love and Light, what that LL stands for, the organization that's publishing the Law of One materials and that channeled it originally. Apparently there's a huge number, maybe hundreds of millions of wanderers now on the planet helping out. That's also why I sometimes say, what is mine to do? Because obviously there's so much difficulty on the planet, so many crises, so much important work that needs doing, and yet no one person can do it all. And those who just get overwhelmed, oh, there's so many terrible things happening, oh my God, I'm paralyzed and can't do anything, just feel like, what's my passion? What's my, like, you know, for me, it's Awakening Plus and the work I do to help people wake up. You know, my whole philosophy, my particular piece is, okay, I want to help people awaken from the inside. And when a person has awoken, then they'll go out and they'll do their mission better. So part of what I do is help people wake up so they can get on their mission. And when there's enough awakeners, that kind of just logarithmically multiplies. So I know that a person who is not holding a strong divine consciousness with the best of intentions will go out and still not create an optimal outcome, because any unresolved wounds and traumas and darkness in them will inevitably get sown into the works they do. They may not want to, but you can't not have the vibration that you are expressing to what you do. So the more awake you can be, the higher vibration your work and the quality of your service goes higher and higher. And the power of your service increases too. So I'm one of those who's here to help people awaken and heal and grow in consciousness. And then all those people will go out and do their work, and they in turn will, of course, help heal and awaken others. And it just cascades. So that's a little perspective on that, hopefully. So I hope that's an adequate answer, Joanne. I hope I didn't wander too far off your initial question.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There are a lot of star seeds, people from other places, et cetera, and whatever. I also was going to comment on, I realize we have my feeling is we have a blueprint, and we come here with a purpose. And when that's done, we leave, whether we're 3 years old, 20 years old, 100 years old, then we go. You know, I'm kind of in judgment. I read on Facebook and people are trying to save these people. And my mother is like 80 years old, they say, and she's being intubated, and pray for her. And I'm thinking, is that the right thing? Is it really that person is their life? Maybe they're really at the end of their life and that's how they're supposed to go out. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that a lot of people are dying because they're meant to go now. They're not meant to go into the next. And I keep seeing all these people on Facebook and places saying, please pray for my whoever, whatever, keep them alive. And I'm thinking they're maybe not meant to be. And
yeah, I'm right there with you. Can I address that, Joanne?
Yes, please. That's the question I have.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with you. In fact, I am so careful not to violate, you know, another person's destiny. So what I'll do is you may notice, like when we do prayer work on our group calls where we're doing that kind of thing, I just say, you either just ask for highest good and leave it at that and just trust that the divine intelligence flowing through you knows what that other person or situation needs and don't even have an opinion about what should happen. Or if you really feel called for some reason to ask for a particular outcome, for example, if I'm doing shamanic work and someone comes, can you please heal the wound I've got from my abusive childhood? And I will ask for that healing to happen, but I will always include a phrasing that I call a karma-free safety clause. I say, this or something better, highest could be done. And what I'm saying is, yes, I'm honoring the intention this person has, and I will now work toward the accomplishment of this goal. But also I will say, if for some reason it's really better for them, given the reason they incarnated, not to have this thing happen, then don't let it happen. So that's kind of the attitude I take. And in the same way, like even when I hear someone who's ill or someone who's in a terrible situation, all my standard blessing is just highest good for so-and-so. and that's all I say. And then I feel the divine energy go out, and I can feel that my higher self has connected with their higher self, and they're in spiritual dialogue, and my higher self is being guided by that other person's higher self to send the energy through. That's exactly what that person needs. And the energy even modifies in real time as the work happens. And Benjamin could never manage all that. So I like to leave all the hows and whats up to spirit. And Benjamin just offers himself as a conduit. So that's how I usually approach that sort of thing. Risa, did you have something you wanted to throw in there? Joanne, let's let Risa talk, please.
Okay. That fits in with something that crossed my mind a few minutes ago, but I didn't ask. After these 20 years, I realized, of course, we're looking at the 20-year anniversary of the September 11th attacks and such. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you had any insights into those events and where they've led us and what kind of turning point that was, now that there's been some time to reflect on it. And of course, a lot of people left us that day, not more than in other events, some types of other events, but it was very dramatic. And
it was, yeah. I'll just share what comes to mind in response to that. It was a terrible tragedy when the attacks happened on September 11th. And, you know, it was a horrible thing to have happen. But the aftermath of it, when the U.S. decided to get into a 20-year war in Afghanistan and start creating so much collateral damage, I think the estimates I've heard are that the ensuing wars and things the U.S. did were responsible for the deaths of like over 1 million people. So we lost 3,000, and then we directly or indirectly caused the death of over 1 million. That doesn't seem like fair balance to me. So the U.S. is, you know, having to learn some humility. I hope it does. And I was really glad that even though it wasn't done really skillfully, that we finally pulled out of Afghanistan and finally ended that war. I'm not sure it's our job to micromanage that country. Again, I listen to a lot of politics, but I don't claim to have ultimate political wisdom. And I'm only saying this because you asked my opinion. I would love it if more people and more governments really worked in from a place of love and compassion to the others in the world. You know, an example is the COVID situation right now. Here, many countries are talking about third doses for someone when most of the world hasn't even had their first dose. And I wish the countries were a little more, even if their own self-interest is all they're looking at. I mean, the classic example, the Delta variant came up from another country where not many people were vaccinated. And now that's been messing with the U.S. And some of these countries just aren't getting yet. If we don't take care of the whole world, then we ourselves are continually at risk because another variant can come along and wipe out a lot more people. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. We need to take care of each other in whatever way is appropriate so that there can be, you know, the whole COVID situation is such an opportunity for the world to come together in compassion, even if they're only doing so out of self-interest. It's in everybody's interest to get this thing behind us. And all the people acting selfishly are just prolonging the suffering and causing more death, is my own thinking about it.
So do you see kind of a 4D purpose behind that or something else? That's all kind of very practical, the things you were talking about.
Well, again, given the viewpoint I hold about reality, it's an opportunity to polarize service to self or service to other. You know, are we doing things in a way that we're just a little bit more concerned about other people than ourselves, at least? Or are we just saying, I'll just take care of myself and too bad about you?
I have a personal interest in that. My mother died on September 13th, 2001. She went into a coma on September 11th.
Oh my gosh.
And I really feel that she was a peace activist, and she would have, in just practical sense, she would have been appalled and I don't even know what she would have done seeing the wars that came about. And I grew up in New York, so my father worked right by the World Trade Center. Not oh, wow. then, but earlier. So that was a familiar site, a familiar place. The whole sense that New York would get attacked at some point was also very familiar to us growing up at that time in that area. It was just kind of always part of our reality that New York was a target. And but I really feel so strongly that she had to leave, and that in a way she may have been a guide, and that some of the people who left too may have had other purposes to fulfill by leaving this plane. And I was just thinking about those sorts of aspects to it.
Yeah, I have similar attitudes, you know, based on all the inner world experience I've had. You know, I have every confidence that when this body dies, my spirit will remain and move on to whatever's next. And so I don't think there is any ultimate death of a consciousness. It just changes shapes and forms. So, you know, death, you know, if we're working for that little perspective, oh, my God, isn't it terrible that person died? Not for the being that was inhabiting the body, because that being is great. You know, they're up in the next realm and doing their thing and are probably great, you know. Or at the very least, even if it was a traumatic human life, maybe they're now in a healing space where their soul will be rehabilitated and then move on to whatever's next. But they're fine. Nothing is ultimately killed in that way, I don't think. So I agree that sometimes it's time for something to die. You know, we have a cat right here, Annie, who, you know, is on her last days. And we're just trying to feel when's going to be the right time to put her down, because she's a trooper and she's moving along, but she's obviously lost a lot of her sensibility and she's, you know, losing control of her body. And, you know, we're just trying to wait for that intuitive moment when we know, yeah, now it's time to let her go and let her spirit move on to a more healthy body than the one she's in.
I wish you had, Annie. That's a sad time. And I think all of that kind of loops back around to the question about what happens when somebody asks for prayers. I mean, you can also pray for the person who's asking for prayers, that they can find some peace and acceptance with the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good prayer. And again, I tend to keep it simple, just highest good to whoever. And I don't even try from my own human self to decide what they need. I just say, you know, spirit knows so much better than Benjamin does. Let's just, whatever they need, send it to them. And that I find to be a very efficient and I think helpful way to bless. So that's just what I do. But I'm very Capricorn. Dale, did you have something?
I did. In my spare time, one of the things I do is I do communicate with animals. So if you want me to see if your cat wants to talk to me, I'd be happy to do that. I do quite a lot of work with captive parrots.
Oh wow, that'd be great. Maybe you could stay on the call briefly after. Or are you here in the United States?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let me type my number, and what we could do is, if you're willing to take just a moment with that after we're done.
Sure.
You could just call me right after the call ends, and then we could do that. But I don't want to do it on the call because I don't want to take people's time for that. So I think I just direct message someone instead of sending it to the whole thing. Just let me try that again. To everyone. So I just put it in the whole chat. I published this on my website anyway. It's not like my phone number is a secret. So Dale, if you just call me after this call ends, that would be awesome. Thank you.
Will do.
Okay, cool. Now there's a something I typed in the chat window I wanted to come back to. Someone from an iPhone. Do you have information on the hierarchy of dark beings and the history of them? Do you know the categories? I don't work with them conceptually on that deep a level. I'm not going to go into hierarchies of demons or anything like that. But I do know they exist on all levels, at least from third density up. And there's a dark being appropriate to give appropriate catalyst to every being of light. So I don't have the precise knowledge of hierarchies and categories or anything like that. And for me personally, I don't feel like I even need that information. All I know is if one is messing with me, then I'm going to start looking, okay, what shadow work do I need to do? What healing, what moving up in consciousness do I need to do to, you know, get to where this being can't mess with me anymore? So that's the best answer I can give to that question. Okay. Anyone else have anything? Carmen.
So I just became aware in the last week of an angel victory. Have you ever heard of angel victory?
I have not.
So I belong to a near-death experience group, and the woman who was speaking lives not far from me, actually. And she wrote a book, and she was talking to us about angel victory and to pray and ask angel victory when you need help.
Hmm.
And it was new to me. I hadn't heard of it either.
Hmm. Well, see if it works.
Yes. I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Well, you always invoke the archangels and all, and I just wondered, had you ever heard of angel victory?
No. Hmm. But there's probably far more spiritual beings I don't know about than do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you feel called to work with angel victory, go and see what happens.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I have another question.
Okay, Joanne.
Or a comment. Sometimes, so after we do, like last night, I was like zoned out. I had a headache for a couple days. Last night, I got rid of the headache. But great. So it's good. So what I find is when we go to those higher states, I mean, I get like what people say, it's in the walls. I'm in the walls. Like I'm not coming out. I'm not coming down. I'm not grounding, or am I not disconnecting? But I feel like I'm in this higher space for like 2 days, and then I can't get my regular work done. Do you understand? You see what I'm saying? Can we do much?
Are you asking how to hold consciousness and be productive in 3D?
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Yes, that would be yes. Because I know whenever I get into higher states, like after our sessions Monday and Wednesday, I feel like I just want to keep going for a couple of days. And do you?
All right. So consider the possibility that you're holding a paradigm that it has to be one or the other. And the paradigm I work from is you can be holding ecstatic divine consciousness and be even more productive in your human daily life. There is no contradiction. The idea is to integrate that consciousness into daily practice and to have it with you all the time, ideally. That's why I call my first invocation embodied awakening, embodied right here, right now. And whenever I introduce the thing, I one of the benefits I always say is you will, whatever you're responsible for, you'll handle more responsibly and more joyfully when you're in this state. So I encourage you to reconsider your paradigm that I can take this consciousness and merge it into my body in a way that it will help me do even better in my daily stuff instead of zoning out. So there is kind of sort of a way of thinking of awakening where it's otherworldly and not even here. This is the opposite. We're bringing the awakening into the body and we're being really productive and functional with it. So if that conceptual shift is not enough, then invoke, say, okay, if you're feeling all spacey and not wanting to work, just say, Spirit, shift my field so I can maintain this awareness and do everything I need to do in my daily human life even better. Just make that specific request and see if that doesn't shift it.
Okay, because for years, people are always saying, well, you're not grounded. You're not grounded, and you can't bring in the whatever you're looking for if you're not grounded. You can't do your work if you're not grounded. And then, because I'm rarely feeling like I'm in my body, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you might need to do a little extra work on grounding. And here's a couple of things you or anyone else could do to establish that.
Okay.
One is simply invoke it. You could just say maximum grounded consciousness that serves highest good. And let them do that. If you want to do an active visualization, a really great one is to imagine that there are roots growing out of both of the bottoms of your feet going all the way to the center of the earth.
right.
really grounding you in so solid. And then that may be enough. If you want to go a step further, you inhale and you imagine you're drawing energy from the very center of the planet all the way up those roots and up your legs and all the way to the top of your head. And then you breathe down gratitude to the planet. Thank you, Mother Earth, for your energy. And you just keep breathing up that energy from the core of the earth right up all the way to the top of your head. And then as you exhale, thank you, Mother Earth, or thank you, Pachamama, or thank you, Gaia, whatever you say. And that alone might ground you really well.
Okay.
However, the ultimate is, so that would be a compensation for not being grounded enough.
Yeah.
A person who wanted to balance it out then could do the same thing in the opposite direction. They could then breathe in the light of heaven into their crown and down to the bottom of their feet. Mm-hmm. And then thank you, heavenly force or whatever. Thank you, divine. And you could all, okay, I take a breath from the earth, bring it up to the crown, build myself up. Thank you. Then the next breath pulls the energy down from heaven, down to the feet and up. There's Tai Chi forms, Qigong forms that do this with physical motions. So again, whether you do it through passive invocation, just asking that it be done and passively receiving it, or whether you do active visualization and conscious movement of energy, as long as it gets done, you know, whatever fits your style better, do that.
Right. Okay. Because, you know, I love being in the higher space, but I feel like I wasn't getting anything done. And then I'll then the whole next day, then I'll go, okay, I'll take this day off and tomorrow I'll get done. But I'm going to try that.
Yeah, shift your paradigm. Say, I should be able to come out of that meditation and be even more productive, more grounded, more efficient in my 3D. And I get to keep the divine conscious. I'll give you one little illustrating story to cap this. This is one of my favorite stories. There's a beautiful spiritual teacher named John Mark Stroud. He used to live here in Asheville, North Carolina. We used to attend his event. He would like stream movies. And he said, these are all metaphors for awakening. And he'd pause the movie and elaborate on how it's a metaphor for awakening. And he did a lot of great stuff when he was living here. But he went to India to a place called Oneness University, which is now called O&O Academy. And they do this month-long thing that's designed to wake you up. And he did not have his awakening while he was there. But he was at the airport on a shuttle between terminals, and the awakening hit him on the shuttle. And he's, oh my God, I'm hitting it now. And somehow he managed to catch his planes home. But when he got home, he was so altered that he couldn't function for 3 weeks.
Wow.
He told a story on himself. He said he's standing in his closet naked. He intended to go and put some clothes on, and he's looking around, oh my God, I'm the shirt, I'm the pants, I'm the socks, I'm the shoes, all of it so ecstatic, oh my God, this is great. And for half an hour he's standing there naked becoming the clothes in his closet, and finally his wife comes in and says, John Mark, do you need some help? So that's how spaced out he was. But he says he was not going to sacrifice that awakening. He says reality is going to have to catch up with me.
There you go.
And so for 3 weeks, he said he was not even functional. But finally, after 3 weeks, he finally integrated enough that he was able to still have that ecstatic beingness. And now he could function in 3D again.
Maybe so also bringing it in and asking for complete integration, that it just takes place. Would that be also another thing?
That would be, I don't know if he did that. He didn't.
Okay.
He didn't tell exactly how he accomplished that.
But
I would say definitely ask for the integration. I mean, I'm, as you know, I'm a huge fan of asking the divine to do for me what it can do better than Benjamin can do.
Right.
Okay. So I'm all about that. If the divine can do it for me, hell yeah. Okay. Let's get it done more powerfully and more efficiently, because I'm going to delegate to that which does it better than the ego, all those things. But the point of my story about John Mark is, you know, he could have said, I just can't function. I have to give up the awakening and be functional. He wouldn't compromise it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you have to compromise it either to be fully functional.
Okay. So I have to, what I realize is that I'm, as they say, as you get older, you unlearn everything you've learned, because that's kind of what I'm doing, I think.
Well, yeah, isn't that famous Star Wars line, right?
Yeah.
You must unlearn what you have learned. Right?
Right.
Yeah, and so basically the game is, most of us are born into this realm of complete nonsense and illusion.
Right.
And we're fed a whole bill of goods that isn't the truth at all. And then we awaken by layers. Right? It's the game. Spirit plays with us. Okay, Spirit says, I'm in oneness. Everything's great. Nothing's happening in oneness. Let's have some experience. And so the only way to have any kind of experience is to throw itself into illusion and have a separate part of itself thinks it's not God anymore. And then have that part make the journey through the layers of falsehood back to truth and back to oneness.
Yes.
Yeah. What else is there to do?
It's a live, strange trip. It's bad, right? Something like that.
Yeah. So, Risa, did you have something? Thanks, Joanne.
I just wanted to say to that sometimes doing is not the highest purpose for you at the moment for any person. Mm-hmm. Sometimes going within is really the rebalancing aspect that you need. So the other thing is to determine which mode you really are called or your spirit's calling for you to be in at that mm-hmm. moment, instead of just pushing yourself to do and be and achieve and be in that, you know. And I just wanted to balance out that because it felt like it needed to be.
That's an excellent point. If one had a deep experience, you had the luxury of taking a few days off and just being in the state without doing anything, that would be fabulous. I agree with you. But I was imagining a state where, okay, you've just done an Awakening Plus call on Wednesday night and you got to go to work Thursday morning. So how well can you keep that consciousness and still go function and do what you got to do? You know, what do they say? After enlightenment, the dishes. Something like that. But yeah, I totally agree with your point. And if one has the ability to make that extended space to integrate and just be, that is awesome if you can get the time, for sure. All right, we're nearly at 90 minutes, and I don't want to go a whole lot beyond that. We have time for maybe one more question. Or not. So Jeannie just typed a bunch of hearts. Thank you, Jeannie. Yeah, it feels like we're done. So I think we got a cool event here. I've had a great time. So, and we had lots of great questions, lots of interaction, and I'm sure a lot more people will check it out on the archive as well. That's you if you're listening to it in the archive right now. So yeah, let's do this again next month, and we'll just keep running this on 4th Thursdays, and we'll see what happens. So thanks everyone for your awesome participation. And just as a reminder, I make no claims to hold any absolute truth on anything. I have learned a few things. There's a whole lot more I don't know than I do. And as you heard, I admit when I don't know something. But my goal in this event is just to share whatever wisdom I've gained in a way that hopefully is helpful to at least one other person. So thanks very much, y'all. It's an honor to be here. And, if you're here live or listening really quick, I'm sorry. I was about to say our next event will be, but this is that next event. So just watch your weekend email and you'll learn about next week's events too. So thanks very much, everyone. And God bless you and good night.